I'm not indispensable, for if I can't be replaced, I can't be promoted either. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. I'm not indispensable. If I can't be replaced, I can't be promoted. So many times we go through life thinking that we're indispensable. We think that we are indispensable as a mother or father, that without us our children would never get along, they'd never survive, they'd never accomplish anything. Well, we watched a Lassie movie last night, and in the Lassie movie, the little boy's mother and father were killed in an accident, and he went to stay with an old aunt and uncle who were past their prime and were ready to retire to another dimension, and they weren't really able to be good parents to the boy. And so the boy felt he was a burden to them, even though he was only 4 years old, and so he ran away. Now, the aunt and uncle didn't feel they were indispensable, and nobody felt they were indispensable, but the little boy felt that he was creating a problem by being necessary to his aunt and uncle. They're really quite elderly-looking people. So he ran away. And when he ran away, then he created other problems wherever he landed. He created other problems not because he was a bad boy, but because other people fell in love with him and wanted to do things for him and wanted to give him a good home and make sure that he had a good home, make sure that everything was in right order for him. And this created quite a bit of confusion for everybody. But finally, I was interested in the boy Jeff in Lassie. Jeff says to the young boy Timmy, "Well, now, Timmy, if you can't stay with us, I'm sending Lassie with you, period." And Timmy says, "Really?" "Yes, I'm sending Lassie with you, period." "Oh, really?" "Yes, I'm sending Lassie with you, period." Then, not more than 12 minutes later, showtime, but of course a century later in the actual time, but a few minutes later, the boy was going to stay with a young couple that wanted to adopt him, that wanted to watch over him, because the elderly aunt and uncle couldn't do it. And so then the little boy says, somebody said, "Well, Lassie and I will come and visit you," or something like that. And he looked at Jeff and he, as much as say, "You told me I was going to have Lassie with me." And a long, 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 hateful, miserable, poorly written silence was in there when Jeff had to remember that he had offered the boy Lassie. And when he finally dawned on him, he didn't even have the proper look on his face about it. He just said, "Oh, and you keep Lassie with you, and I'll come and visit you and Lassie, you know." But you see, Lassie was indispensable to Jeff. Jeff had raised him, and he was brought up with him, and Lassie was very important to his life. But Jeff was now a young man, and he was able to give up his irreplaceable, indispensable dog. You see, Jeff, I don't want to say Jeff, that's not really fair to the boy. The writers of the show didn't remember that only a short moment ago in the script they had said to the boy that the dog would remain with him if for any reason he couldn't stay, you know. Well, he didn't stay. And he got the dog, finally. But they made it as though the dog was indispensable to Jeff. Now, if they could have shown Jeff's face, and if Jeff's face could have said, "Oh, I'm going to miss Lassie," you know, but they showed nothing. They showed nothing to indicate this mental turmoil or this emotional turmoil in losing his very special dog that he's been raised with. You see, the dog became indispensable, and yet the dog was the very purpose of the show, and the very purpose was to make the transition so that this young boy would now be the king of the Lassie show. In future issue of the show, you'll see Timmy there. Timmy is going to be the one who's having the adventures with Lassie. And it was so sad when the little boy marched out into the lake, running away, and he started to drown, and that his stepfather, his new father, rescued him. And Lassie was right there.
Yeah.
And Lassie wanted to rescue him. Lassie could have swum out as, real fast and pulled the boy in, because Lassie's trained to do that. And it could have been so significant, you know. And the father, of course, instantly grabbed the kid when Lassie had brought him in, because he got there by that time. You know, he could have been a little later getting there. And he could have given him an artificial respiration and brought him back, which he didn't really have to do too much. But you see, we think these are indispensable things. We think it's indispensable that the adult, that the new father, save the boy, and though the boy feel in responsible to the father, indebted to the father for saving his life. And that's a terrible way to have a father. That's a terrible way to have a father, that you're indebted to him for saving your life. But because he loves you, that is beautiful. You see, indispensability comes in many sizes, in many directions, in many ways. And we are so remiss in how we look at ourselves and how we look at indispensability. Every one of us feel we're indispensable to our job. Ellen feels if she were on her deathbed and she'd look at me and she'd say, "Herb, I'm sorry to leave you this big mess of taking care of it all by yourself." I'd say, "Ellen, don't give it a thought. I'm going to close the doors for a week and I'm going to go on vacation to celebrate your moving into your next convention and just rest." And Sylvia and Sylvia and Ingeborg are going to be sent off on a week's vacation away from me to do whatever they want to do to get their life in order. And but nothing will happen at the universe. So what? It's my show. It's your show. It's our show. Whoever's doing it, you know. And you feel so Now hush. You're not helping my story. I'm telling the story. Now, if you come to the realization that you're really not so indispensable, that you're going to die and give us a hard time, you say, "Well, there's no reason for me to die." And so you keep right on living.
I think so.
And I take another vacation anyhow.
And you send us away anyhow.
I send you away anyhow, yeah. But you see, none of us... none of us is indispensable.
And
all of us can be, you know, shooed away. But Ellen, this is the point. While I appreciate you girls all being so attuned to what I'm saying, you have to be careful you don't jump the gun. I might be going at it from a different direction. If you remember my indispensable Salome, she would interpret my lectures in Europe, and of course she was familiar with some of my illustrations, which I gave at different places. And so when she'd hear me starting an illustration, she'd continue it. I'd say, "Salome, I got a different ending." She'd say, "Oh, well, you shouldn't." I've got this one out already. And I said, "Well, pull her back. We got a different ending." And I had to do it. And in fact, I had to do it about 4 or 5 times to get her accustomed to the fact that she's not supposed to tell my talk for me. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, why should I be there? And again, I'm not indispensable. I wasn't worried about that. I'd be happy to have Salome take my story in pure German, because she does a good job.
Oh, yeah.
She has an excellent command of the language. But it's my show, you know. And so I wanted to talk. But as I say, I wasn't at all frightened to have her speak on my behalf. And if you remember, Anita Kuhn, she was my translator and my transcriber and my translator and books and stuff, and a good girl. But I would give my out-of-body journeys, and we had such a good time. And I know when my people have had enough of the out-of-body journey. I know when they're ready to come back and then think about what they did. But it's such fun. And so after I would conclude, and I would say, good night, and I'd get up and leave, and they'd all keep sitting there as they usually do, remember? And so Anita says, okay, those of you who are staying sitting here, we'll take another trip to the planet of unconditional love, but it's not the same. It's okay. It's okay, but it's not the same. And after the first night of doing that, subsequent nights, her crowds dwindled away because she was a different person than I, and she handled it a little differently. Mm. She's a very loving person, a very gentle, kind person, but she didn't have the innuendos, the nuances, and the little subtleties that I put in there that are me. She had the subtleties that were her, which were beautiful. But I had the subtleties that were me, and people were coming there because they wanted to hear my subtleties. And that's what's great. But just remember, I am not indispensable. If I were indispensable, then I can't be replaced. And when I can't be replaced, I also can't be promoted. And we all like to be promoted on the chain of command. We like to be promoted on the income level. We like to be promoted on every possible level that we can think of. But just remember that. I'm not indispensable. I'm never indispensable. For if you're indispensable, you can't be replaced, and you also can't be promoted. And we all would like to be promoted on our various levels of awareness of who we are. Today, we are studying to be a master. Tomorrow, we're a master. If today we're indispensable, tomorrow we can't be a master because we can't be released into it. Think on these things. And remember, that is another one of the lessons of humility that is so very, very wonderfully important. Have a lovely day, and know that I love you, I love you, I love you.
I love you.